The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
You want some bad news, Michael?
No.
What are you asking me?
You're the guru of the gray matter. I figured if anybody had it, you'd have the answer.
I can't give you any direction.
I think I'm going to have to change this channel. I'm sorry.
You're completely wrong.
I refuse to be wrong on two calls in a row.
Tell me I'm spot on or tell me I'm crazy as I'll get out.
I have no idea.
I have a six-month-old, so we'll be raising him according to Dr. Ray.
Talk about being a winner.
So, you want my question?
You ain't making any sense.
You're absolutely right. I just needed confirmation.
So what are you going to do about it, Dawn?
I'm calling you.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Dr. Ray Grandy, a graduate of the Catholic Media School of Broadcast Articulation and Stuff. You know what I noticed? A lot of these broadcast professionals, these interviewers, that get paid massive amounts of money. They ain't the most articulate people in the world, and I used ain't on purpose. They'll say things like, well, let me ask you a question. Now, wait a minute. You're interviewing this person. What do you mean, let me ask you a question? Isn't that what you're there for? Or what they'll do is they'll ask their question and then answer it. What do you think about that position of that particular representative? You know, because I've noticed that when he says those things and they go off into a monologue. Well, monologue. I have corner on monologues. Lots of I means. So this situation, I mean, was difficult, and I just mean I don't really know, you know, how difficult I mean it should be to like I means and likes and you knows and oh is huge, is big. That stuff pervades our everyday conversation, and you can't really expect folks who are talking to always be articulate, but the professionals. You think they would practice a little bit, maybe study their interview style, their interactive style with guests a little bit, and see how they can improve it? But I'm basically perplexed and shocked at how routinely, as a friend of mine, my producer man for Living Right with Dr. Ray says, these are crutch words. They fill the silence. There's one particular guy who talks a lot about political, social issues, and I've noticed that there are pauses in between some of the ideas that he presents. He's not uncomfortable with a gap in the articulation. He doesn't fill it with a, you know, so I mean, thinking like that is sort of like... I don't know. It's like I have to do continuing education for my license in psychology. I stopped counting how many times the presenter, this was a 6-hour presentation that I watched, said right after something he said. In this situation, it's difficult to completely understand what is actually happening, right? So what we do is we draw a conclusion and we put our data together and we try to realize what's the most optimal perspective, right? And I realize he says right all the time. And my wife says, why do you notice these things, Ray? There was one very, very high profile, probably the most high-profile radio commentator in northeastern Ohio. He had the drive time on the largest talk station in northeastern Ohio. His favorite word was, okay? He might say something like, this year the Indians, well, sorry, that was back when they were the Indians, but, well, he was on when they were the Indians. This year, the Indians have a great chance As long as they shore up that bullpen, okay? They don't do anything about that bullpen, and they're going to struggle into the late innings, okay? I pointed this out to someone who was a regular listener to his program. I said, do you realize how often he uses the word okay after something he said? The guy said to me, I never noticed that. I'll pay attention. I never ever noticed that. A couple days later, he gets back with me. He goes, you're right. I stopped counting how many okays he said. I said, exactly. But the interesting thing for me is you're a regular listener and you didn't notice it. My wife says, Ray, why do you notice it? Because when someone's in my office, I have to pay attention to the words they use. Now, I'm not paying attention to their filler words. I'm paying attention to the words they use to describe their situation, their personality, their struggles, their emotions. Because those words help me to make the proper questions. The proper questions. And as a result, I'm more attuned to filler words, crutch words, and there's a lot of them. There's a certain irony to it also. Probably, I'm going to say 30 years ago, maybe 35. A lot of people, me included, made fun of what we called the California Valley Girls. Girls that were kind of socially superficial. And their language was replete with, so like I was so excited like when I went because like there were people everywhere. And I'm like, this is great. So my friend says, like, you want to go? And I said, like, I sure do. They took us over. Like is now probably still the number one filler word. It's used as a comma. So my mom said to me, like, are you going to really go there? And I said, like, well, where else am I going to go, you know? So she said, like, it's a comma right before the quote. I had another CEU presenter, another 6 hours worth. Like was her favorite word. It was relentless. And I got to admit, it was hard for me to take in what she was saying substance-wise because there were so many likes. I was going to say sprinkled through it, but they're not sprinkled through it. They permeated it. And I wonder, why is it? I know I do it. I will, on this program, I will at times say, I may say like. There are times, see, did you hear that just now? You hear it? See, it's easy to do because when you're surrounded by that kind of expression, you absorb it. It's unconscious. And you have to actively fight it. The question arises, why would you fight it? So what? That's true. But going back to my observation about these TV interviewers, they get paid gazillions of dollars for their programs. I would think they'd try a little harder to be a little more articulate. There's one former political figure, very, very bright guy. No question the guy is bright. He's informed, he's well educated, he's thoughtful. Pretty much he begins every single answer that he gives to an interview. Well, in a situation like that, well, I think you got to consider two factors. Well, I don't know if I would say that exactly. I think well is a stall. I'm not really quite sure how to start this, so I'll use an introductory word. Sometimes takes the place of well. You know, one of the new words now, and I've talked about this in this program before, perfect. I noticed this probably about 10 years ago. First time I noticed it, I was filling out the form for a rental car at an airport. The counter person said, your name, sir? Garendi, G-U-A-R-E-N-D-I. Perfect. What's your address? 75 blah, blah, blah. Perfect. And I thought, well, I would think it would be perfect. I know my name. I know my address. Pay attention to when someone is talking to you, particularly over the phone, getting information, asking you about yourself, your demographics, your number of children. How many children do you have? 5. Perfect. And I'm tempted to say, is that a perfect number? How do you know that's perfect? Maybe 8's perfect. You know, in the Bible, 7's somewhat perfect. It tells you how easily we are shaped by the people around us and how they talk and how they think. This is just minor language defects. Can you imagine when it is an attitude or a mindset or a particular perspective or a moral, how much we can be shaped by how those around us think? If we can absorb like every other sentence and use it in our own vocabulary, how easy is it for me to absorb some of the new morality that just seems to be constantly coming at me in every commercial and every show and every news commentary and every article? Not every, but definitely in the media. So, like, you know, I think maybe I will. So, take a break and stuff.
Ever get asked one of those tough questions, like, do Catholics worship Mary? And in that moment, you freeze? Truthfully, the Catholic AI app gives you answers in seconds rooted in scripture, tradition, and the magisterium. Whether you're navigating a tough conversation, deepening your faith, or looking for daily spiritual guidance, Truthly helps you know, live, and defend the Catholic faith. Truthly can be found in the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Truthly, T-R-U-T-H-L-Y.
Our world is filled with noise, work, screens, and endless demands. But Christ calls us to step away and listen. The nonprofit Revive app offers one-on-one virtual conversations with certified spiritual companions who help you deepen your relationship with God, discern His will, and find peace. If even the saints needed spiritual guidance, how much more do we? Your first two sessions are free. Download the Revive app today. That's R-E-V-I-V, and then the number 3.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Hello, I'm Marianne Kuharski with Pro-Life Across America. Did you know that a billboard can save a baby's life? When our billboards and radio ads are running, we receive hundreds of calls from those seeking pregnancy information and support. Every caller is connected to a local center offering free ultrasound and confidential counseling. Won't you join us in this life-saving effort? Donate today and help us do more. No gift is too small. That's prolifeacrossamerica.org.
I didn't take my faith seriously, which probably means I never really got it to begin with. No, I didn't want to give up sin. I mean, the reason we sin is because sin is fun. But it's self-love sin. But it's amazing with God's grace how easy trying to not sin it really is.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for whatever reason, we invite you to take another look. Visit CatholicsComeHome.org today.
Dr. Ray Gorendi. Hit it, Jerry.
to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In. This is E-Person Monday. I didn't announce that at the top of the program. That was a faux pas on my part. Which, by the way, you know that's one of the rules of writing? I try to keep myself abreast of some of the stuff that makes for easy-to-read writing. And they advise you to shun foreign phrases. They're kind of cliche-like. Would that be a filler word? Kind of cliche-like. But a faux pas is something that you won't find in a lot of good writers' books or articles. They'll find another way to say it. I live with a thesaurus. I truly do. Is there another word for a thesaurus? I'm trying to find it. Because it's like Mark Twain said, and their like is okay. Similar to Mark Twain said, the difference between the right word and almost the right word is the difference between lightning and lightning bug. All right, let's see what we got here on the e-person list here. Go over to here on my phone. My husband and I have four children, ages 20 to 30. Three of them are transgender. They all talk to me, even trust me. They have a hard time with my husband. They know what we believe. They accept that I will use their chosen name, but will not refer to the wrong gender. My husband says he feels called to evangelize them and save them from their ways, which just seems to put a wall between them. Am I just appeasing them? Mom, my first question is, how is it that you have three of four proclaiming themselves transgender? I would wonder about the common denominator here. What is it among the three siblings that they have come to this conclusion about themselves? Do they share ideas? Do they visit the same places on the internet? Do they have the same peer groups? Something, I believe, is underlying three of four saying, I am a transgender individual. What is this? That's the one thing I would know. I would ask them this. How is it? It's quite unusual to have three children in this. It's unusual to have one in the family that claims himself to be transgender, because transgender is still under 5%, but quite unusual to have three. So I'd be interested in talking to them about this. How did you come to this conclusion? What is it that influenced you or helped you to think this way? I'd want to know that. And I think you're going to get different answers from each one. But you look for the commonalities. You use their new name, Mom. They probably sense from you that you are perfectly accepting of this. And your husband says, No, I'm not perfectly accepting of this. I have a lot of questions about it. And he doesn't use their given name. So I can see how they would be upset at him because of this. They probably see him as hyper-religious, and in his religiousness, they see him as judgmental. They don't see it as, Dad has a definite set of beliefs. We're asking Dad to go totally against that set of beliefs. He doesn't want to. So therefore, the heck with him. Instead of saying, well, we don't agree with Dad, but just like I have my set of beliefs about this, and he doesn't agree with me. He has his set of beliefs, and I don't agree with him. So what they're essentially saying is, I want Dad to tolerate me, but I don't tolerate Dad. That's what they're saying. The other warning I would have for you is stuff like this has great potential to damage a marriage. I don't know how far apart you are in perceiving this and what's going on. And it sounds like, I'm reading between the lines here, Mom, that you're afraid of losing your kids' goodwill. You're afraid of losing the connection with your kids. And you're afraid that your husband is going to sever that connection. My suggestion is, a middle ground between the two of you, is to let the kids know what you believe and your deepest held beliefs. Still love them. Still relate to them. And tell them that this is the difficulty you're having to see them as a different sex than you raised them for 20-some years. That's fair. That's fair. The other thing I would ask you as a parent, did you see gender confusion in all three of them growing up? One of the things that I'm encountering a lot of is this kind of gender confusion is coming from not only the mindset that's prevalent out there among the younger generation under 25, 27, but the internet. If they searched out any particular sites, any particular domains, the algorithm kicks right in and starts pushing all kinds of the same stuff at them. Whatever chat rooms they visited, however. So for me, the question was, were you confused about this when you were 9, 12, and 15? Or did something happen when you were 23? I want to get to the bottom of this. I would talk to them. I'd say, don't write your dad off because he has trouble with this and he doesn't really know or want to call you by your name and your newly defined gender. I would want to know how militant they are about it. It is one thing to say, well, this is what I've chosen for myself. It's quite another to say, if you do not applaud what I've chosen for myself, then I will shun you. Talk to husband. Tell him he's got to make it clear to the kids that he loves them. But he also makes it clear to them that this is his deepest held beliefs. Are they asking him to abandon his deepest held beliefs? So, 3 out of 4. Quite a bit. All right. We have a son who is 14. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm looking at the clock here before I even start. I got about 30 seconds till the music starts. So I'll just use filler words the next 30 seconds. My website's drray.com. There are 17 books there on all manner of things. Parenting, marriage, emotions, the faith, living better. The books are all discounted. All books are signed when we send them out. So if you go to drray.com, drray.com, you can peruse them, see if any of them might look helpful to you. I'm Dr. Ray.
Living the Beatitudes with Father Bjorn.
Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. This strange beatitude reminds us that Jesus is challenging us with his ways to heaven on a new exodus. We're leaving behind the Egypt of this world to find the eternal paradise of heaven. When we tend to think of happiness, we tend to think of it in a self-centered way, a possession of a temporary good or passing fancy. But Jesus is calling us into eternal happiness. And actually, morality is a search for happiness, says Dominican priest Servais Pinkers. We're looking to be happy, and a lot of times we end up at dead-end roads that don't lead us to where we want to go. How can we be blessed when we mourn? In sorrow and difficulty, hardship and cross, we are called closer to Jesus. It's God's fingerprint in our heart reminding us that we're made for eternal happiness. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted.
For more about the Beatitudes, visit EWTNRC.com.
How did the apostles learn to pray? By observing their leader, the master of prayer, Jesus Christ. The Catholic Catechism reminds us that Jesus often drew apart, frequently at night on a mountaintop, to pray in solitude. He includes everyone in his prayer, for he has taken on humanity in his incarnation, and he offers us all to the Father when he offers himself. By his human prayer, the Word, who has become flesh, shares in all that his brethren experience. He sympathizes with our weakness in order to free us. Thanksgiving precedes Jesus' prayer as in raising of Lazarus from the dead. Before the miracle, Jesus prays, "Father, I thank you for having heard me," which implies that the Father always hears his petitions. Jesus also reveals how to ask. Say thank you before the gift is given. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
The Wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I said to the sisters one day, "What do you think you're going to look like in heaven?" Oh, some of them had absolutely magnificent ideas. I didn't think of one of them. So I got desperate because then my turn came. I didn't know what to say. And so in desperation, I said, "What do you think I'll wear in heaven?" And they all said with one voice, "Armor!"
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Doctor is in asking the question. If Dr. Ray speaks on the radio and nobody is listening, will your kids still get better? Will your husband pick up his socks? And will your mother-in-law think that you are the best mother she has ever seen as she says on Christmas Eve, "You are so much better at this than I ever could have dreamed of being"? Well, let's not get carried away. This is E-Person Monday, where I take on, I used to say tackle, but that was kind of violent. Got in trouble for that. Target's really in trouble. Address is a much more benign, sensitive word. Address your e-persons, not emails, because that's insensitive. E-persons, we have a son who's 14, has a sprained ankle and hip flexor problems. He needs to do physical therapy for them at home. Small, simple exercises a few times a day. But he avoids doing it. And he has a bad attitude about it. He'll do them if we tell him to do it. But he won't do them on his own. Which I think he's old enough to not have to be nagged about it. I think partially he is defeated because the injury ruined his marching season and cross-country season. I think he is also tired of the pain. I'm assuming that means the pain of doing the exercises. But he's also stated that he doesn't think it will get better. In other words, what he's saying is, it doesn't matter if I do this or I don't, because this is just something I'm stuck with. Not true. However, we need him to do the exercises to get better. Also, we spent a lot of money on this, and we'll have to spend more for more physical therapy. Obviously, the only way he won't get hurt again and ruin next year's marching and cross-country seasons is doing these exercises and following doctor's orders. That's not necessarily so. Doesn't mean he's 14 years old. 14-year-olds generally heal pretty well. The exercises will help the healing, I'm sure. We've considered making a chart. He ticks off three times a day. He marks it on the chart, I guess. And if he misses an exercise, he gets privileges taken away for a week. And more if he misses more. Let me comment on a number of things here, Mom. All right. Part of it is you're dealing with physical rehab's a pain in the butt. It is. When I had I had a surgery last year, and I had to go into how many weeks of rehab? 18 weeks of rehab. Now, I quit at the 9-week mark. And I quit because I said, let me take the test. You had to take a test. Let me take the test and see how I do. So I passed easily on this test. And I said, I'm not coming in anymore. Now, one, it was a pain. I had to get up early in the morning and go to the place and do it for an hour. It was a pain. However, I think what he's thinking at age 14, this is a pain. Now, the comeback to that is, these are simple exercises, no big deal. He's got to just do some stretches. He's got to get on the ground. He's got to pull his leg up a little bit. It's not that big a deal. And it's not. But you also said something interesting. You said he's defeated. In other words, why try? I've already lost my seasons. And then you say things like, yeah, but this is for next year. And then he says, no, it's not for next year because I'm not going to get better anyway. It's not making any difference. I still hurt. It's not making any difference whatsoever. He doesn't see it accurately. It's important that he do this. So, you're on the right track, I think, when you take away privileges. I think I'd take it a step further. I would say, until the exercises are done. In other words, he has to do it 3 times a day, which is, say 3 minutes apiece. Well, if you want to make it easy, you can tell him, if the doctor okays this, you can do 9 minutes worth all at once. Once you do the 9 minutes, you're a free man. You have all your privileges. You don't have privileges if you don't do it. Now, if you only want to do 3 minutes, okay, you'll have your privileges until 3 o'clock when you have to do another 3. If you don't do those 3, your privileges stop. So you link, this is the ticket to 14-year-old perks and privileges. That's what it is. That's what you do. Parents will often make the observation that my child has to do these things or else, physically or else. I had a couple of kids once, way back when I was at the mental health center. The one kid was diabetic. And the mother said, well, he just sneaks every sweet he can get. Well, in those situations, you got to get rid of the sweets in the house. But I had another kid who had to wear corrective lenses or he was going to go blind. Now, that's not something you mess with. You do not mess with that. That 11-year-old kid didn't realize what he was risking. He had no idea. He had an 11-year-old mind. So you basically tell him, unless the glasses are on, you don't have anything. You can sit and pick your nose, son. I am not going to let you destroy your eyesight. That's not going to happen. I will put toast and green beans in front of you because you're not wearing your glasses. And once he knew they were going to do that, he decided, well, okay, I'll wear them. But what the parents were doing was nagging and arguing and pushing and nodding. Same thing here. Yes, ideally, he would do these on his own. He would say, this is what I need to do. I want to rehab. I want to get back in shape. I'm ready to roll. But my guess is that throughout the day that he doesn't do his exercises, he's definitely entertaining himself with a whole lot of other things. What do 14-year-olds do? Maybe he's got a smartphone. Maybe he's on the computer playing video games. Maybe he's talking with his buddies. Maybe he's outside shooting hoops. I don't know what he's doing, but he's doing something. And so his attitude is, that stuff is just a pain in the butt. I don't want to do it. It interferes with what I really want to do. And so I don't want to do it. I'm going to make a comment, a general comment about this after the break, because I think this feeds into what appears to be, in this young man's approach, a lack of self-discipline. This is something that's somewhat hard. It's unpleasant. It's intrusive. It isn't on my priority list of my daily activities. So I ain't interested. We'll talk about this. We'll talk about this as a generic societal problem. When I come back from the break here, and the doctor is in on this e-person Monday.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
Here's the new challenge. At least 1 hour a week in front of the Blessed Sacrament, with the goal of an hour a day in front of the Blessed Sacrament. I had a guy come up to me and he says, Father, you know, I'm doing a lot of things. I'm in a men's fellowship. I pray with my wife every day. I go to Mass every Sunday and usually a couple times during the week. I read scripture. He goes, I want more. I said, do you pray in front of the Blessed Sacrament? He said, outside of Mass, no. I said, I think that's the more. See, all these saints, these are the ones who surround us. These are the ones who ran before us. These are the ones who fought well, who kept the faith. They would tell you, as would every single saint in heaven right now, you cannot run this race if you don't spend time with the Master. Whatever else we're doing, it's second, third, and fourth. First things need to be first. And the first thing is to be with the Master. And the Master is Jesus.
Teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. In the Bread of Life discourse, documented in John chapter 6, Jesus states that he is the bread of life, and that his flesh is true food and his blood true drink. The Jews were scandalized in verse 52. How can this man give us his flesh to eat? Jesus does not back down, but reiterates this teaching four more times over the next four verses. Many left in verse 66 because this teaching was truly difficult. But at no point does Jesus water down his teaching and call them back. No, he allows them to leave, and even questions his 12 apostles if they too wish to leave. Jesus intended to be understood literally, and the Jews, apostles, and the Catholic Church absolutely take him at his word. Examining the truths of the Catholic faith, this is faithforensics.org.
Because I am a man, when one of my kitchen appliances stops working, I will insist on taking it apart. Despite the overwhelming evidence from the past that this has just cost me twice as much once the repair person gets here and has to put it back together. Nevertheless, I venture forward. Honey, let me take a look at it. At which point she has this look of terror on her face. No, Ray, please, please, just don't, please. My wife is subtle at making her points like this. At our previous home, we had a wood pile stacked next to the shed. We had a burning fireplace. Particularly rough rainstorm, a lot of wind blew the wood pile over. As I sat at the dining room table, looking out at the wood pile, looking like I'm pondering on what my next move is, my wife comes over, and at that time, this is how far back it was, she laid down the phone book. I said, honey, what's this for? She said, well, I figured you could just look up someone who specializes in restacking wood piles. She made her point. All right, my previous e-person was from a mom who said they have a 14-year-old son, sprained ankle and hip flexor problems. He's supposed to do physical therapy three times a day. He begrudges doing it. He resists doing it. He'll do it if they force him, but they think he should do it on his own. Now, they've tried taking privileges away, and they have done some of that, but I gave some suggestions on what to do. And I said, if you were not listening prior to this break, and you know who you are, I want to comment from a generic societal perspective. I think there is a distinct inverse relationship between the easiness of life, the comfort of life, the materialism of life, and self-discipline. To the degree that, let's just use this 14-year-old for an example, to the degree that his life is very comfortable, and you have to acknowledge that in the U.S., we are extremely, by and large, comfortable, despite all these horrific advertisements. 17 million children go to bed hungry. Oh, come on. That's one-third of all the kids in the U.S. They may not eat right. That's a given. Nevertheless, we're very well fed. We're very well entertained. We have enormous flexibility and variability in our living arrangements. We have air conditioning. We have hot showers. We have all the clothes we need. Even our poor, below our poverty line, live in better circumstances materially than much of Europe or Japan. So all that said, when you have a curveball thrown at you, like you have to do 12 minutes a day of rehab, when you are required to show self-discipline in an area that you're not at all interested in, but nevertheless, you must. It's intrusive. It's viewed as, this is interfering with my pleasure. Every small business person I have talked to in the last 20 years has told me that one of their problems, if not their number one problem for their business, is finding reliable help who will show up, who will take initiative even. Most of them are just grateful that the help shows up, who don't call off regularly, who don't look for ways to skirt responsibilities. I told my kids growing up, you show up. You give them a good work while you're there. You're going to be gold. You're going to rise. Flat out, you're going to rise. One of my sons who had a hard time in high school with education, it was hard for him. He rose very quickly in a fast food place. Why? Well, because he showed up every day. He worked hard every day, and now he's a shift manager. His intellect didn't get him there. His responsibility did. So I would want to talk to this parent and say, because your son is resisting doing his physical therapy, is there any relationship to how he spends his time otherwise? Now, if they say, no, we don't spoil our children, I always argue with that. I say, of course we do. We don't deliberately, perhaps, spoil our children, but they're spoiled, and I am spoiled because we live the way we live. We live far beyond anything across human history except kings, maybe the very wealthy. And at that, we eat so much better than kings. No king would even dream of walking into one of our grocery stores and see what's available for us. So as a result, when it comes time to do these sort of self-discipline exercises, it's something that doesn't appeal to me. It's not in my list of preferred activities. I don't like getting up at 8 o'clock and having to be at work at 8:30. I don't feel like it today. I'm a little tired. I'm going to call in. I don't want to do rehab. Rehab hurts a little bit. Very, very common. And I don't really know how to address it. I can't address it from a culture-wide standpoint because we're very fortunate that we can live as comfortably as we do. But from an individual standpoint, I guess what I would say to parents is, be careful on how easy you make it for your kids. Make it easy in terms of love and support and care, but in terms of privileges and comfort and freedoms and options and entertainment, keep in mind that the more you allow that stuff to guide their life, the more likely they are to have a harder time when it comes time to show the discipline needed for responsibility. It's a simple inverse relationship. Now, I have to take a break because I am truly, truly tired here, and I don't see why I have to do this for a whole hour.
The doctor will be with you in just a moment.
Ever get asked one of those tough questions, like, do Catholics worship Mary? And in that moment, you freeze? Truthfully, the Catholic AI app gives you answers in seconds rooted in scripture, tradition, and the magisterium. Whether you're navigating a tough conversation, deepening your faith, or looking for daily spiritual guidance, Truthly helps you know, live, and defend the Catholic faith. Truthly can be found in the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Truthly, T-R-U-T-H-L-Y.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
He was a doctor of the church and one of the most famous saints of all time.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Augustine is honored for his immense contributions to theology, but he balanced his genius with humility. Once declared, it was pride that changed angels into devils. It is humility that makes men as angels. He died in 461.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town, where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. That's AveMaria.com.
This is interesting here. This particular question comes from a listener, and it kind of piggybacks on what I was just ranting about a few minutes ago. Adversity can help faith grow, as we see in here with the persecuted Christians in the Middle East. Yes, it does that. It can for a certain segment of the Christians, it makes them stronger. For others, it crushes them. That's a sad reality. People talk about, well, you know, when the Christian faith was persecuted in the old Soviet Union, people stood up stronger. Well, in fact, they practically extinguished the Christian faith in the Soviet Union. They're extinguishing it in some countries in the Middle East. In the United States, are we seeing where we live more securely and comfortably that faith wanes or does not grow as strong? Then she follows with, are we wimps? A pastor friend of mine once gave a homily, and he said that the hardest people to evangelize are those who are fairly comfortable. because their view is, well, this is good. This is kind of semi-heaven, and I like this, and I don't see any need to look any higher. This is my comfort is keeping me from turning to God. And you know, the old, you have to get hit with tragedy to either abandon God or to embrace Him. Some truth to that. But I do think that indeed the early Christians had to battle their way through the multiple persecutions in the Roman Empire, through the various emperors who came and went, who decided Christianity just didn't belong here and we have to extinguish it. And we, in awe, look at what they did, the things they accepted, some of them anyway, not all. Some of them, in fact, we've got to be careful we don't romanticize the whole thing. Some of them, in fact, collapsed and said, okay, don't, I'll do what I have to do to admit that I don't believe in it. But not all. And here in the U.S., as we are very comfortable in many, many ways, we're not emotionally comfortable. If you look at the stats emotionally, we're among the least happy of people in the world. But in terms of if objective material comforts, we're off the charts compared to the rest of the world, much of the rest of the world. So given all that, does that affect our turning to the faith? I see it among those I know personally, that they're comfortable with where they are, what life has to offer them, and therefore where is there an opening for God? Why the need to look into this, to explore it, to understand it? Why? I'm doing pretty good. Things are going reasonably well. So yes, I think that is one factor in keeping a lot of people from more seriously pursuing the faith, what it means.
What it will mean.
Because in essence, this is a little bit of heaven on earth. When you're well fed, when you have shelter, entertainment options, when you don't work 14 hours a day to exist, when life wasn't hard and people died routinely in their 30s and 40s, and 50% of babies and infants and children didn't make it to age 5. I mean, life in history has been nasty, brutish, and short, to quote the philosopher. So when we've done a lot to make life much more comfortable, we look less toward God. We're more inclined to look for eternal bliss. And how do we strive for it when life on earth is rough? Now, I'm not saying we need to go back to rough, but it's harder to look toward God when things are going materially well. But the irony there too, though, this is an interesting irony, is that even when they're going materially well, we're unhappy because we want more. I've got a car, but it's not the nicest car. I mean, boy, that car over there is a lot nicer. I wish I had that one. I got a really nice house, but boy, I wish I had a bigger one, nicer one. You know? Oh, I got a decent job. I make ends meet, but boy, wouldn't it be great to have a job where I make 3 times as much? And I can go on vacations and do all kinds of things like that and buy a new car every 2 years. There's this temptation to never be satisfied, no matter how much you have. So, yeah, to answer the question, I think that, in fact, having a materially comfortable existence can make you less likely to pursue God. You want examples on this? How many of our high-profile celebrities are really open about religion? They have everything. that you would think people would want. Fame, fortune, money, recognition. But yet, where is God for them? I think it's safe to say that higher percentage of them ignore God than a higher percentage of the average person. Okay, I got to run. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. Thanks, Andrew Krucek. Thanks to all of you. Walk with God, no matter
what. For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.